Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
This is Seth Gilliam.
Hey, this is Holland Roden.
My name is Kiahu Kuhuanui.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Ponzio.
I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hey, it's Ronnie Adams.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Ha-ha!
This is Jeff Davis, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
All and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, episode 93. This week, we're back on our character analysis episodes to match up with Karen's beautiful feature articles for Hyperbole going through the exploration of each of Teen Wolf's major characters. And Karen and I are going to be talking about Styles this week, which is someone that I'm sure everyone has been waiting for if you've been following our character arc episodes. So Karen and I, hello Karen.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Natalie, by the way, if you're tuning in for the first time, not that I think anyone is, but there's always new people, I suppose. We're going to be talking about Styles, and then later on in the episode, I'm going to be talking about Styles with another guest who's a bit of a different perspective. It's not Dylan O'Brien, spoiler alert, but just a different perspective on, you know, Styles' arc and what has happened there and how that affects the fandom. So I'm not going to give too much away yet until we have that bit all done, because that's going to be a separate little portion that will be fun at the end, and it's something we haven't really done before on the podcast. So you'll hear more of that at the end of the episode after Karen and I discuss the canonical arc of Styles throughout the show. So this will be fun. If you want to get in touch with us, you always can on Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. Our email address, natwpodcast@gmail.com. Our Instagram, NATW Podcast, where we post pictures when we go out to Teen Wolf related events, which I will be doing this weekend, actually, for our Sydney convention, Sydney Teen Wolf Convention, Creatures of the Night. And our Tumblr, the massive hub, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.com, which is also a Tumblr, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. You can follow us there, and that's a huge hub and resource that we try to post all of the news, fan creations, and our own speculation on there. So if anyone wants to reach us, they can. Karen has been doing these feature articles, which we haven't – I mean, we've done the character arc episodes. We haven't super discussed the article perspective. What made you sort of want to do these character features for Teen Wolf? Like, because you do Teen Wolf news, it's sort of – and these aren't really news articles on Hyperbole. They're actually sort of more creative features. So what's the deal with you doing these, basically?
It was kind of twofold, actually. First of all, part of our duties as news writers is to write feature articles. And when our show is off air, we're supposed to do one feature article about every month. And so I needed to find a topic that I could run with over the course of the hiatus. And the second part of that is that when season four ended, I was kind of thinking back on, in particular, Scott and Lydia's journeys and how much they have changed over four seasons. And I just couldn't get out of my head, like, the idea of exploring them from start to finish being where we ended with season four. And
yeah,
how much I've grown to really love them more than I thought I ever would. So I started with Scott, went to Lydia, and now I'm just working my way down the line, and the next one up just happened to be Styles.
Fair enough. And did you find this one sort of harder or more, you know, more difficult or easier than Scott and Lydia, given that they kind of were in your mind when you started the feature?
This one was a little bit harder just because I felt pretty much the same way about Styles from the beginning. I really liked him, and not to say that he hasn't changed, because he definitely has, but as somebody who wasn't super crazy about Scott and Lydia in maybe the first two seasons, saw their change and it impacted me more by the time we got to the end of season four. And so for those, I could be like, look at this huge gap and how much their characters changed and they've grown into these beautiful people. Whereas I sort of always saw that with Styles. So there was less to say that I thought it was obvious. So it was just a little bit harder to gather the words together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I see what you mean there. So now that you've done the feature, obviously we're trying to do related episodes, and the timing of this one is not quite, like, you know, released on the same day or anything. Unfortunately, we've been a little bit hectic with how things have been going, but here it is. And so you are going to be responsible for leading this discussion based on your article, basically, because I did not feel confident doing that. So I'm going to hand over to Karen now to be the leader of this episode, and she can take us through the discussion. And we're going to sort of talk back and forth about his arc over the years. And then I'm going to, as I said, have a chat with someone else about another perspective of looking at the way that Styles has changed. So, yeah, do you want to go ahead then?
Okay, so first question is, how big of a fan of Styles are you?
I immediately really did love him, obviously. Immediately, he was the first thing about the show that really captured me. And I still think that he is the same quality. Like, that character is still the same level of... you know, both quality acting, like complex character work, you know, funny, all of those things, still has all of that and more. But as time has gone on, I think the other characters or the other actors have raised up to his level, whereas he used to be a standout, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. And I think that's sort of what I was trying to get at, actually, without realizing it, where I said that it's not that he's stayed the same, but I guess I've always felt the same about him. And yet the other characters, I've grown to love them more. And I think a lot of it does have to do with the other actors raising their own bars to meet his.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty much the same. Styles was definitely a standout, especially in season one. He just jumped right off the screen, and he's been full of heart and funny right from the very beginning, and I think that that's carried out really well throughout the four seasons that we've had so far.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's definitely, we've said it a million times, like, Dylan O'Brien is one of those people who is naturally gifted. Like, they just can do, you know, with no, you know, experience or training, they can just do something really unique. And it's not to say that other actors can't meet that skill level, but not everyone is exactly like that automatically. And so every, you know, I think that the approach of the, you know, some of the other actors or the writing early on was a bit different or a bit more typical, and he was very atypical. And they've now, not necessarily because of him, but just as a unit, they've all actually become more complex, and they all keep up with each other, I think, really, really well now. So there's a lot more to really love. But it definitely used to be that he was very much a standout. And it's less that he's not standing out and more that everyone, as you said, has raised the bar, which can't be a bad thing, honestly.
No, not at all. But let's go back to season one and let's talk about the introduction of Styles, because I think it's still one of my favorite moments from the character, where we first meet him. He's hanging upside down off of Scott's roof and he wants to go find a dead body. What was your first impression of this kid?
Insane, like just ridiculous. I don't know, like just, yeah. Like a delinquent, probably. Like, I thought he'd be naughtier, like, badder than he was, if you know what I mean. But then you kind of discover his dad's the sheriff, and it's, like, a bit, you know, there's that aspect. But, yeah, I thought that he was going to be more of a, like, crazy, light stuff on fire kind of, like, destructive kind of person. But, it was definitely the bit on the roof, I think, has obviously really stuck with everyone pretty strongly.
Yeah, I always saw him as the instigator, and he was in a lot of ways. I mean, Scott was a good kid. Not to say that Styles wasn't, but Scott wouldn't have gone out in the woods if Styles hadn't have dragged him along with him.
Yeah.
And I really liked that Styles was sort of the bad one and that he was adventurous. But at the same time, when they find, you know, the dead body and and when he comes up against the scary stuff, he freaks out. And it's like, well, you walked into this yourself. But I think that's just the comedic side really playing out. The other thing that I really like about Styles is that, yes, he's the instigator. Yes, he and Scott tend to get into a lot of trouble together. But he's also Scott's support system. And right from the very beginning, he figured out what was wrong with Scott. He always believed in Scott. And I think that's really important that they haven't dropped the ball on that relationship between the two of them, because it's one of the core aspects of the show.
Yeah, I think that, like I've said, I'm really hoping that we get more about their kind of how they started, basically, because that's one thing that, you know, that we're meant to just sort of, you know, believe, obviously, you know, Scott and Styles, you know, lifelong pairing of friendship, and it's always the best friend, I'd do anything for you support system, but we were dropped into that already existing, you know, we didn't see that relationship build. And it's not that I don't particularly believe in it, but I'd like to see how it started, basically. And, you know, and if it was actually as deep as it is now before the werewolf stuff, or if it's just like we've been thrown into this situation together and now we're each other's major support. And, you know, it's not that they weren't already best friends, but if they were kind of like, if their biggest concern was like video games, if they were really that, you know, if they ever like hugged and cried, if you know, before that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And the other part of Styles that I really like is he's sort of the brains to Scott's brawn, because he's been the researcher from the very beginning too. And that was kind of a cool aspect to have Styles be this sort of nerdy character. I mean, we find out that he has his own gaming community that he, you know, is involved in and all this other stuff. And he's the one to really dig into the books a lot of times. And for me, it was important to see him not just as that comedic character who was there for the laughs. Like, I mean, my article's titled, you know, Styles Stilinski isn't just the sidekick. He has a lot more going for him. And the fact that he is this researcher, that he's the support system for Scott, is a huge, like, aspect of his personality that really makes him three-dimensional.
Yeah, I think that it's really cool. Like, I think that, you know, he was obviously more keen on it than Scott initially. Scott was like, oh my God, what's happening to me? You know, this is terrible, etc. And though their first initial reaction is kind of to look for a cure, you know, it's still, he's kind of doing the legwork. Like, Scott probably wouldn't have sat there and tried to help himself, basically. He would have just been like, ah, this is happening to me, if you know what I mean. So, it would have been, you know, a pretty different story if he was, you know, dealing with it completely alone and just had to, like, tell people gradually. Like, to have someone from the word go who has, like, a different perspective and a different skill set is obviously, you know, a big part of how Scott has managed to keep it together.
Right. Now, another huge aspect of season one is Styles' relationship with Lydia, or the fact that he doesn't really have too much of a relationship with her, especially in the beginning. She didn't even really know who he was, but he always knew her, and he always knew that she was smart, and she was just kind of putting on airs to make everyone think she was dumb to kind of play the part. So, in season one, how did you feel about Styles' crush on Lydia?
I think that it was very evident, you know, immediately that it was kind of one of those things where you mentioned where it's kind of like, you know, from afar, and it's like more of an idea of like, oh, you know, the hot girl at school that I've always, you know, liked, if you know what I mean, she doesn't know who I am. And I'd be, again, like, it's stuff we actually haven't seen yet, because at the time it did seem like, you know, not super important, or like kind of something that, you know, oh, he'll learn better one day that that's not actually, you know, a thing, if you know what I mean. But, you know, then towards the end of the season, you sort of see that he does actually, like, know a lot about her. And I don't know how he knows that, if you know what I mean. Like, if it's like, you know, if they used to be more, you know, they used to be in a closer circumstance when they were younger in some sort of, like, you know, classes together or something. Or if it's literally just from, like, watching her. But, like, how, you know, at first it seems like he's just one of those people that, you know, he's like, oh, no, you know. And, you know, my love for her is real. You know, everyone thinks she's the hottest girl in school, but I really know her. And, you know, like, delusional, if you know what I mean. And then we learn that, you know, though it's not necessarily, like, coming from knowing her in the same way that he knows her now, like, he does know her in ways that sort of other people haven't noticed. And I'm curious, like, how that happened, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I want to say a lot of it is just through observation. I mean, obviously they've gone up in the grades together and stuff like that. I don't think it was a creepy, like, stalking her type of situation.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, he's very aware of her and he just notices things and I think kind of files those away and puts two and two together and realizes that she's not exactly the person that she's portraying herself to be to everybody else.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, and I just, you know, it's just a question, because we never saw them before that, like, we never saw any scenes of him, you know, of her watching her, you know, him. There are obviously the moments, you know, a cougar is a mountain lion, and the Molotov cocktail, and we've been through all of that. He's clearly, you know, been exposed to the way that she acts and covers stuff up. We just didn't see too much of that happening from his perspective. So I'd actually, again, it's just another thing I'm really curious about. It seems like a lot of these characters in the show had a really rich inner life before the show started, which is always a good way to start a show, if you know what I mean, to drop a show in to characters that, you know, have they didn't start existing the second you see them on the screen, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really big part of Styles in season one, basically, you know, especially with Lydia, and then it's a big part of her, Lydia in season one as well.
Definitely. Now, I want to jump into season two, but this next point sort of covers, I think, the entire series, and that's that Styles is the human, and he's quote-unquote weak, which obviously I think a lot of us would argue against, because there's a lot of different ways to be strong without being physically strong like a werewolf is. But
yeah.
Styles' human weakness comes into play in season two a bit more, but it's also an overarching theme throughout the entire series, because he's basically the one person who doesn't have either supernatural powers or specialized training like Allison did. And I think that's a huge part of keeping this entire show grounded in reality, because I think there has to be one character that we can connect to on that human level that kind of opens up the universe of Beacon Hills to us as audience members.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways he's like Scott's comic book girlfriend, if you know what I mean, because Scott's actual girlfriend is actually like a, you know, a monster fighting, like, badass. But yeah, he's, you know, I think that definitely, you know, every show about supernatural characters, you know, it needs to have that. I can't think of any that really don't, you know, or at least the good ones. And I think, you know, I think it is a good choice to have, you know, to have him like that, and to have, you know, going on to that. And we'll, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it, his interactions with Peter in season two, and how he had kind of, you know, playing into the, like, kind of jealousy of, or you know, like, you're nothing, you're just a, you know, puny human, and, you know, and then, but he still turns down, you know, getting the bite from Peter. And I do think it is important. You know, obviously he hasn't been, you know, here the whole time, but yeah, as we'll go on to discuss, but his, I guess, weakness, yeah, it does sort of say something about the character that he, you know, keeps throwing himself into these situations and doing all this crazy, you know, crazy dangerous stuff, you know, because he believes it's right, or because he thinks it's interesting. because this is the world he's caught up with, but he has no real means of protecting himself. You know, he hasn't chosen to, you know, learn anything with a weapon except, you know, hitting things blindly with a baseball bat. You know, he's, you know, tried to contribute with, you know, research and planning, and he has that aspect, but it doesn't mean that he stays out of a fight no matter how much people try and make him do that. And another really interesting perspective for me with Styles as the human is that his dad, like once his dad knows about everything, that's something like, you know, like Xander in Buffy is doing all this dangerous shit all of the time. We never meet Xander's parents. We don't know Xander's parents are freaking out about the fact that Xander like hangs around with like vampires, if you know what I mean. Like with the fact that we have like the very real perspective of like Styles' dad knowing that he's like very fragile, you know, vulnerable only child is like constantly risking his life with all of this crazy shit, I would like locking him in his room and like never let him out, basically, if you know what I mean. So I find that really interesting, and from the human perspective, that it's not just, oh, it's the puny human. It's like we see the consequences of him being the puny human in terms of, you know, his dad actually knowing about it as well. So that's one of my favorite things about it.
Yeah, definitely. I want to kind of go back to what we were saying before about him jumping into situations. I think, you know, I would argue that that makes him even braver than somebody like Scott, because Scott can take on werewolves. Styles has been very lucky thus far. And the fact that in season two in particular, he's also trying to protect Lydia from Derek's pack, because remember, Derek and the others were trying to, they thought that she was the Kalima, and so they were prepared to take her down. And Styles tries his hardest to protect her, and he does a lot of that with his brains, you know. He doesn't necessarily try to jump Derek, but he, you know, tries to outwit people. And I think that that makes him very intelligent, but also makes him very, very brave.
Yeah, I agree as well. And it's kind of something I wasn't sure whether I should say or not. Like I do agree with you, but I was kind of like, if I say Styles is braver than Scott, will I get in trouble? I know. Yes, I totally know what you mean. That objectively, you know, someone with no defenses jumping in to contribute in the same, you know, in places where everyone else has got a lot more, you know, physical power than them is pretty, you know, brave, stupid, reckless, one of those, you know. It's one of those things, or all of them. But yeah, I do actually agree with that.
And one of the most powerful scenes in season two is when Gerard beats Styles up. And we see him after the fact, and his face is all busted, and his dad sees him, and his dad's angry, and Lydia comes in, and they have, you know, their moment together and stuff. And I think seeing him live through those consequences of being in the middle of this supernatural world kind of really hits home for me.
I think I'd mentally like repressed the Gerard thing, honestly, because yeah, it's horrible. Like, it's horrible. And then him having to come back and basically, you know, at that point, his dad doesn't know, like, you know, pretend that, you know, whatever it is he pretended, you know, about what had happened, is just, that's the kind of thing I mean. It's much more realistic than like, oh, the humans that run around with the Vampire Slayer, or, you know, whatever other supernatural shows that, you know, with teenagers are getting into trouble. Like, you see them having to explain themselves, basically. You see him having to be like, you know, lie or, and you know, end up telling the truth eventually about this weird antic. It's not just like, oh, the teenagers exist in a bubble and, you know, lol, no one knows about it. So I think that it adds to that, the whole thing with Gerard and his dad, and, you know, him coming back after all of that, but also him being actually used in that context by Gerard as, you know, either, you know, or being used at any point by villain characters as either, you know, a source of information or as like a bargaining chip to get to the more powerful friends, if you know what I mean. Like, he's the, you know, the bait, the weak, you know, we can't hurt you, but we can hurt him and you'll come and get him, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, he is certainly in, you know, one of the highest positions of risk in the show. Like, he's basically set himself up to be that bait forever, you know, as long as he doesn't have any supernatural or kind of martial artsy, like, super badass physical resources. So, yeah.
And I can't even imagine having to lie to his dad about that. I think he said that, like, some guys from the other lacrosse team beat him up. And to have to lie to your dad, first of all, they're obviously very close. Lying to him has to be really hard. I mean, you could tell that he didn't want to do it. But, I mean, when your life is on the line and you can't even tell your father, who's the sheriff, what happened to you, I mean, that's brave in and of itself, because he knows, well, he knows that they have to take care of it, but he also did that to protect his father, which, you know, comes into play over and over again.
Yeah, it's miserable, that end of season two stuff with Gerard, and then with Lydia coming over and seeing him as well, and just, it's miserable. Like, it's all, and Peter, and just everything, like him getting, you know, him and Peter as well. Oh, it's, yeah, season two is actually a rough time towards the end for Styles.
Yeah, especially because at the very end, we see Lydia reunite with Jackson, and Lydia and Styles had obviously been growing a little bit closer over the course of the season, not as close as they will become in the future, but in those final scenes there, when they're in his room and he's explaining about, like, his birthday presents to her and stuff like that, you can tell that there's a real connection there, and neither one of them is, you know, putting on, like, a personality to kind of keep up their image. They're just very real with one another, and for Styles to have to witness Lydia and Jackson's love for each other and how that love saves Jackson, I can't even imagine what was going through his head. I mean, that's rough.
Yeah, I mean, he just kind of dealt with it, but it does suck. Like, it would really not be that, yeah, not that nice, to be honest, really not that nice. And yeah, he just, you know, we never really hear what he thinks about that, you know? We never really hear from him how that affected him, and he just kind of went with it. And I suppose we might have if Jackson had remained in season three, but he didn't end up, obviously. So he didn't end up staying, so we never really got to address that. But, yeah, it did rather suck for him, I suppose.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe it is that he just soldiered on right into season 3A, and he... I think he really comes into his own in season 3A. I think a lot of the characters did. I mean, we've already talked about Style or Scott and Lydia in particular, but Styles is right there with all of them, and he becomes this pseudo detective, and this starts off because his childhood best friend was murdered, and this is the whole plot line with the Drock, and so he has to figure out what's going on, and he has, like, his boards and all the string and all this other stuff going on. And Styles, I think, becomes more independent from Scott. I mean, he's still his best friend. He's still his support system. But now we're sort of seeing Styles being part of that plot in a bigger way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that it is more... Well, I think that the stakes for everyone become a lot higher, like, literally everyone. Because, yes, that, you know, season two has weird deaths and, yeah, you know, or a weird, you know, a bit of a... But it's all sort of, you know, or weird endings and weird goings-on. It's all sort of within the little bubble of their little supernatural world, whereas with season 3A, it's like the whole town thinks there's a serial killer epidemic. Like, it really becomes wider and affecting more of the world. And so everyone, all of the characters, kind of have to start being like, all the characters have to start... not only just hiding things more but also, you know, they feel more responsibility to stop or help what's going on because they actually know some of the aspects at play, whereas, like, the cops are like, who's killing all these people? Well, like, 12 people have died, you know? And so I feel like that's more of, like, of the aspect. So whether him as the support system, him as the researcher, all of that kind of thing is, you know, he feels more of a responsibility that it's actually not just like a little game him and his friends are playing, if you know what I mean. It is actually kind of a super big deal.
And it once again puts him right into the middle of the whole situation again, because, you know, there's that sort of funny scene, sort of a little bit scary scene where he was like, oh, my God, virgins are getting killed. I'm a virgin. Mm. Somebody have sex with me. And we laugh about it. But, you know, it was a real worry for a little while that he could have been taken. And, you know, that has absolutely nothing to do with him being associated with Scott. It had nothing to do with him coming up against, you know, somebody else. It was just circumstances. It could have been anybody, and it could have been him. Luckily, it wasn't.
Yeah, not to mention, obviously, that, you know, like you've put him here, we didn't know her very well, but his own childhood best friend, you know, family friend, his whole life, who we meet, you know, early on, is one of the people killed. And, you know, we don't throw back to that much in terms of the canon. Like, now we don't, like, see, oh, Styles is still sad about Heather, but I'm sure he is, if you know what I mean. Like, it's just not a major part of the story. And yeah, so she was one of the first people killed, obviously, and that does drive him quite dramatically, as well as just everyone being killed and him being at risk.
And he steps it up just like Scott and Allison do when, first of all, his father is taken and, you know, the parents are taken, and that's a huge deal. And they have to make the ultimate sacrifice. They have to die in order to kind of re-spark the tree.
Nemeton.
I wanted to say Nagitsune, and I was like, no, that's definitely wrong. Not yet. the Nemeton. And the thing with that is that, you know, they go into the water, and first of all, I want to say that, again, for all three of them, super brave choice to do something like that. They didn't know if it was going to work out. They were just hoping for the best. And, I mean, it ended up having pretty crappy consequences in a lot of ways. But that ultimate sacrifice really was a huge step for not only the characters but the show, because it propels us into season 3B, 4, and, you know, it's we're still seeing consequences of that. But also, I want to note that Lydia was the one who had to partner up with Styles. And I think in terms of their relationship, that's a huge deal. And it shows how much they've connected over the course of 2.5 seasons. Mm-hmm. And again, later on, they become better friends. But even in season 3A, you see them getting together a bit more. And it's really nice. I really like them as friends.
Yeah, and certainly at this point, Lydia is obviously in on everything, as opposed to in, you know, 2, where she only sort of found out at the end, or found out in bits and pieces, and they were still sort of trying to hide it from her. Once she is actually in the circle of what's going on, yeah, I think her and Styles, you know, sort of discover more about their bond. And, you know, it's one thing to sort of just automatically care about someone because, you know, you decided a while ago that you have a crush on them, and now you sort of irrationally care about them. And, you know, they discover, you know, what it is actually like to get to know each other, and it does work very well for them. Obviously, we discussed this in Lydia's episode as well, but it does work very well for them. And, you know, her going with Styles is also kind of a consequence of Deaton knowing that Scott and knowing that Isaac and Allison are having a bit of a thingamy bob. But what
that was, I know exactly what you mean.
Well, you know, and but yeah, so it is actually, you know, interesting that she, in order for it to actually work, for everyone to have someone who can ground them and who is very emotionally connected to them, that Lydia and Styles do have a strong enough bond for that to work for them rather than Allison and Lydia going together, basically.
Didn't we call it strip chicken? Wasn't that what it was called when Allison and Isaac, like, tore off their shirts?
I think that was after they did the whole, like, drowning thing, though, didn't they? They weren't already having... Yeah, I'm sure it was, because they haven't... because that was the first time that they were, like... That was the first confirmation we got that the Allison and Isaac thing wasn't just, like, weird chemistry. That it was, like, no, it was meant to be them having their little, you know, she stabbed me with tiny knives and, oh, we're on the motorbike together being sexy and stuff, if you know what I mean. Like, nothing happened in 3A. It only happened in 3B after Scott was like, oh, what? Like, this is happening? Like, you guys are doing the bath? Okay, this is... Okay, no one told me about this, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that the bath thing was the first time that the audience got confirmation that the Scott and Allison vibe, I mean, the Isaac and Allison vibe wasn't just, you know, projection, that it actually was a little bit of a thing that was building up. So they had not done stripping yet, as far as I know, as far as I can recall.
I think you're right. All right, well, this ultimate sacrifice moves us into season 3B, which is, without a doubt, Styles' season or half a season, because this is when he is possessed by the Nagitsune. And, I mean, we've said it a million times, so you don't need to go into detail, but Dylan O'Brien's acting is incredible here. And I think when you can turn a character who, you know, from season one has been the comedic relief and has been this over-the-top, hilarious, all jokes kind of guy, and slowly turn him into somebody who's getting a little more serious, a little more into the actual plot of the show, and then boom, season 3B hits, and all of a sudden, he's the villain. I mean, obviously it's not him, but he's portraying the villain. Yeah. Absolutely incredible in terms of acting, but also the storyline. I really like that they went darker with this half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it is phenomenal. Like, everything about it from start to finish is phenomenal. Obviously he has some really phenomenal in 3A as well, that's like Motel California and the other moments that are really big for him in 3A, but they sort of more relate as a support network, you know, again, like to Scott and stuff like that. But then 3B is all him, like he's the primary character basically. And it's so much, like, it's just so, there's just so much range, like from him being vulnerable, you know, as when he thinks he's sick and from him actually acting as the Nagitsune, all of it is just, you know, they clearly knew, you know, for a long time that they wanted to give him, you know, something pretty heavy, but, you know, had to find a way to actually work it in, and then they ended up writing a whole season of it, basically. So, yeah, it's, you know, I think that it was definitely potential that was always there, in terms of, like, you know, Styles is a pretty, we know, we've talked lots of times, he's a very grey character, like, morally, like, he's got quite a bit of darkness in him for a good guy, and he's pretty ruthless. He doesn't care about too many choices. He's a bit of a Slytherin. He's very loyal and protective to the people he cares about, but he doesn't have too much of a sense of right and wrong. It's just more like, does this mess up the people I care about? Okay, no, then I don't care. So he's always had that, but this is like, you know, 5 million steps further than that as an actual villain. I think that they knew he could pull it off, and he obviously did, but it was still so much. Like, it was, even when we knew that it was kind of going to happen, like when we knew that this was going to be sort of the plot of season 3B, it was still more than I ever really expected, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to note that this was a big risk for the show too, taking such a lovable character, somebody who is joking most of the time, and turning him into somebody really dark. The only comparison I can really make is with Once Upon a Time. They recently just made one of the characters in a sort of alternate universe it was Snow White, so obviously very pure, very good, and kind of flipped the switch on it and made her the evil queen. And it was
for the whole season,
just for part of an episode. And it was sort of like an alternate universe sort of thing. It's complicated, but that's what they did. And the actress who portrayed her was pretty good at it. And I liked what they did, but it didn't quite stick as much as, you know, this did, where we were all just blown a bit away by what Dylan could do. And also that it just worked really well in the storyline. So I think it's important to note that not every show can do this, where they can just make a really good character into a bad character and pull it off. So the fact that Teen Wolf did do it and that we loved it so much, I think is a testament to Dylan, but also to the writers and just the show in general. Season 3B continues to be one of my favorites, if not my absolute favorite.
Is it funny that it was a risk, and you just said it was a risk, and I was like, of course it wasn't. Like, it's funny that I never even saw it, like, that way, with the Lovell character, because I assume that everyone in the fandom, like, that no one would be like, oh my god, no stars, because everyone knew that he was capable of it, if you know what I mean? Like,
oh,
it's
yeah.
kind of like, you said it was to me like, oh, it was a risk for them. And I was like, no, it wasn't. Of course it wasn't a risk. They knew it was going to be amazing. Like, it was. Objectively, it was. But I'd never even thought of it like that.
I didn't either, honestly, until I watched Once Upon a Time. And, you know, this character...
Saw it not work as well, you mean?
Yeah, it was like, it was awkward. And I kind of had to look away from the TV because she was trying to be all, like, evil and stuff. And I was like, listen... Stick with Snow White. I mean, you did a good enough job considering, but it didn't feel right, whereas every moment of season 3B felt right to me.
Yeah, no, I totally, totally, totally agree. I think the closest would probably be, as well, would be, again, Buffy with Willow going evil after they killed Tara, but that is, again, only for a couple of episodes at the very end of the season. Nothing like a whole arc, if you know what I mean. She has some weird stuff going on, but like nothing like a whole season's worth of arc. And again, it was kind of, it worked, but this was 100% natural. Like, he could have played a villain the whole show, if you know what I mean. Like, this character was completely normal for him, if you know what I mean. Not normal, but like, I don't know, it did work. It completely, like you said, there was not a moment that didn't really work. Even the dramatic screaming of I'm 9,000 years old or whatever it is, because everyone in Teen Wolf, all of the villains in Teen Wolf screamed dramatically, so that, like, fit in perfectly.
just Mountain Ash!
Yeah, pretty much. So even his Mountain Ash moment was not... ridiculous, or it was the appropriate amount of ridiculous for such a moment. I agree, it did work, and I guess, like, I understand what you're saying, that you didn't realize until you saw it sort of not quite work as well. Can't say I've really experienced that, because I don't watch too many other shows with, like, super, like, villainy, kind of, like, evil villainy characters. Most of the other shows I watch are pretty, like, realistic, that don't have really super bad, you know, bad guys, but, I don't know. I think that he really nailed it. I'm still not over the Bad Moon Rising scene in the hospital.
Perfection. And then
he's obviously got his entire other arc, where he either thinks that he has, you know, mental illness, you know, with the therapy with Eichenhaus, and then physical illness with his, you know, with his mother's disease. So he's got so much, range of, you know, vulnerability as well in this season, and just being messed up, basically. That's just fantastic, really. They just tortured him and it was great.
That's pretty much the best way to explain it. And then once again, he and Lydia continue to grow as friends, and, you know, obviously at one point we do get a kiss between them, but it it doesn't necessarily mean anything, or at least it hasn't come to fruition yet, that we haven't really explored how they felt about that. It was sort of just something to stop his panic attack. And I think that the most important thing here is that they're working in conjunction with each other, and they're both brilliant people, and they're both really good at figuring out the clues and putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And the fact that they can work together to make that happen is, like I said before, I just love that they're friends. And I think that the way that they've grown over three seasons up until this point has been really organic.
No, I agree. I agree. And yeah, we've said it so many times so that people are probably sick of hearing me say it. But yeah, I think that anything that's grown between them is not related to Styles' initial crush, except for the fact that he had a sort of irrational care for her. That it was like, oh, I like that person, so I care what happens to her without really knowing her. You know, what they have built now is completely separate to them. It's like them as human beings and completely separate to, you know, anything pre, you know, werewolfdom, you know, pre the whole, you know, exposure to that world. You know, everything they've built has basically been from the ground up and is genuine. And I understand why people would not particularly like Styles and Lydia if they didn't like the idea of, oh, you know, the wish fulfillment of, oh, he had a crush and he was creepily obsessed and now he got her. I'd understand if it was that simple. I'd understand the objection, but I don't see it like that at all. I see it as that kind of going out the window and this being built from the ground up between them, whatever it is that they have, and I do like it.
So do I. But, yeah, you know, of course, season three rolls around. And, I mean, it did start in season three as well.
3B.
Yeah. Right. The relationship that he has with Malia, I think that we at the podcast in general really do like it. And, of course, there's always going to be people who prefer him and Lydia together over him and Malia.
Or Derek.
Right. I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's all, or Scott, you know, there's all sorts of options there. But, you know, his relationship with
Cora,
Malia,
can we just throw it back and go to Cora for a second?
Oh, Cora, where are because, you? Being the
yeah,
queen.
We don't know where Cora is, but he definitely had a little bit of a potential with her during, I guess that was 3A. And had that whole little thing, but then she had to leave, so. And I think that again, we had just throwing back in terms of Lydia, sorry, before we get to Malia, is that in season 3A, after he kind of, you know, sees her with Jackson in the end of B, we actually do see him kind of being like, not like, oh, I'm, you know, going to move on or whatever, like, you know, they don't have that conversation, but you see him, you know, willing to get together with Heather, and then him and Cora kind of have a bit of a thing where it might have gone somewhere if she'd stayed, and it's kind of like he's been like, right, I know Lydia pretty well now, and she genuinely apparently loves Jackson, whatever that's about, and I guess I'm just gonna deal with that and have a life. And so we actually do see that a bit before he ends up getting together with Malia. I sort of forgot about Cora, but she's definitely a contributing factor to that, as well as the fact that he was kind of getting together with Heather as well before she died. Anyway, carry on.
Well, one of the things that I really like about his relationship with Malia is that in some ways it parallels his relationship with Scott, because he's helping her to kind of get control over her powers. And of course, it's sort of a different situation because she was stuck as a coyote for quite a while. But he is helping her incorporate into society. And I think that's where a lot of those funny moments come from, which is a nice kind of switch from season three, which got very, very dark and very stressful. But season four was a bit lighter. And I think that his relationship with Malia is a huge part of that and sort of a necessary part. I mean, I think after 3B, we needed a little bit of light back in the show so we would, like, you know, survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'm glad that they didn't have anything too heavy in season four. I mean, it was all very dramatic, but no, you know, we didn't have like 15 deaths and and all of that kind of stuff. Obviously, the benefactor stuff was quite a big deal, but it didn't end up actually killing any of our leads, which was nice, or turning them into, you know, other weird monsters. And there was a lot more lightness, and I think Malia and Styles are a big part of that. And I know some people don't like that aspect of him educating her because they think that that's not a particularly healthy relationship dynamic. But I think that they're all right, and, you know, we don't quite know where they're at by the end of season four because we don't know what's going to happen with Malia's mother, if she's going to stick around and stuff. But she's definitely decided that Styles is, like, her person that she cares about and is loyal to, so we'll have to see how that goes. But I do really enjoy them from what we have so far. And as I said, like, I don't think that them jumping in together is the same as, not the same, people, you know, who have said that it's sort of jumping straight from Lydia to her, and I don't really think it's that simple. Like, I think that his progression with Lydia, if it ever happens, has been very slow. And as I said, after he did accept her being in love with Jackson, after he even got to know her and stuff like that, that he actually hasn't pursued her at all since then. Like, he didn't pursue her in 3A. He pursued other girls, or other girls were interested in him, and he went along with it. And then 3B, he did get together with Malia in the hospital, and then four, you know, him and Malia are properly together. So, you know, he actually hasn't tried to pursue Lydia at all since she said she was in love with Jackson. And she's obviously been dating other people as well, like Aiden and stuff like that. But there's been a little bit of criticism of Malia, like, saying that he's jumped straight from, like, Lydia to her. And just, I don't see it that way at all, because to me, he really did cut off his romantic. Like, he was like, yeah, I'm going to grow up and get over this in season two. And any closeness him and Lydia have developed since then is actually, like, from scratch, a new thing that may or may not happen later. But, yeah, so that's how I see it.
And along those same lines, is I like how just because he's with Malia now doesn't mean that he can't still be friends with Lydia. And, I mean,
yeah,
a huge part of season four is the two of them solving puzzles and trying to figure out who the benefactor is. And the fact that this whole team works together really well, but also that, you know, there's obviously, I would think Styles has talked to Malia about a lot of things, about his past and probably his crush that he used to have on Lydia. And yet the show has never made it an issue. It's never been a love triangle. And that's something that I really appreciate in writing anytime I see it, when, you know, they can just be friends and it's fine. And maybe later on it'll turn into something else. Maybe later on there'll be a bit more of a love triangle thing. But the fact that they can just be friends and still work together and there's no rivalry between Malia and Lydia is really important to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think so as well. And, yeah, I can't even imagine that kind of, like, I can't even imagine Malia, like, in one part I can imagine her being territorial, but in another part I really can't imagine her being, like, you can't hang out with him to
yeah.
Lydia, if you know what I mean. Like, I can't imagine her doing that at all. And Malia's the kind of person being, like, why would I care, if you know what I mean? Like, I just see her not caring at all, basically.
Now, another huge part of season four is that it tackled a lot more human issues. And I think that was really highlighted with Styles' arc, because he is one of the last remaining humans of, like, the main circle. And the thing with that is, like, he had a lot of financial hardship. He had health concerns for his dad. And I think that after season 3B, where he was possessed by the Nikitsune, and maybe for a little while we forgot that, hey, this is just a human, like, 16 or 17-year-old kid, season 4 highlighted the fact that, yeah, he's just normal and he just happens to be surrounded by all this craziness, but he still has to worry about, you know, having those bills from Eichenhaus and having his dad go into the hospital and that sort of thing. So it was sad in a lot of ways, because those aren't happy things, but it was also nice seeing that again.
Yeah, I think so as well. And that again, like, it just shows that the show doesn't exist in a bubble where all of these things have no consequences, you know, like where the Avengers like blow up New York and like no one has to pay for it or anything, like, you know, that kind of thing, just where basically that all of these things kind of do have issues, you know, real life issues that add up, you know. Scott as well, obviously, you know, still has money issues. It's like, not like he can just magically get money because he's a werewolf, you know. So, you know, they don't have like health benefits for that. So, yeah, I think that it was actually, you know, that was always sort of the promise of season four, was that it was going to be more like real life issues, you know, while happening to be a werewolf, rather than a serious supernatural problem. And yeah, I did really like it actually, especially with Styles. I can't remember, did they end up keeping, like, did he end up getting that stuff paid off? Like, did he keep the money from Derek?
Oh gosh, I don't remember. Oh no, no, they did not keep the money. The bill got like waved away or something because Eichenhaus was crazy and that one dude was crazy, and I think
that's right, they
waved
just were
it
like
off.
Yeah, we're gonna not make you pay for this crazy unethical medical treatment. That's right, fair enough. Yeah, Derek still should pay for it. Not that it's Derek's fault, but Derek has lots of money. Yeah, I think that it was really good. I really enjoyed season four. I'm gonna have to watch it again if I have time before season five, I think. So I feel like Styles, he didn't have the biggest role in season four, obviously, after season three. Like, it was Lydia's mystery was much more prominent, and Styles had his issues were the kind of the backseat human issues. But the fact that they were even in there at all is quite significant in a show that does spend so much time on, like, you know, monsters and stuff. So, yeah.
Definitely. Now, going into season five, you know, I think that there are a lot of qualities that we've come to expect from Styles over the last four seasons. And just like with everybody else, I'd really like them to keep those sort of things. Like, I want him to stay funny. I think that's a huge part of the show and really important to not bring us back down to 3B levels, which was very difficult. But also, you know, keep him human. Like we've said, that's been a huge part of his character from the very beginning, and I think it would be really sad to see him turn into something else.
At this point, I can't imagine them doing that. Like, I can't imagine them actually turning him unless it was like a huge disaster scenario, you know, because he obviously we had the almost situation of, like, you know, him thinking that he had the brain disease and Scott, you know, offering to turn him, which would have been a circumstance I can imagine him agreeing to, and it would have been a lot, you know. You know, if it was, you know, a massive accident, or if Dylan O'Brien decided that he wanted to be a werewolf, you know, finally, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't necessarily say no if they were like, you know, I don't think they'd 100% rule it out, but I think that him being human is really, really, really important. I really like how him and Scott were handling Liam in season four. I think that it was a lot of fun, and really, really sweet and funny. So I'd like to see him with the younger kids a bit, being like, now this is what we do here, you know, I'm the pack mom, you know, you know, Scott's the cool dad, you know, but I'm going to put you in timeout, if you know what I mean. Like, I want to see him with the younger kids, and there's a lot of new characters in season five. I mean, there's always a lot of new characters. They all die really fast. So, you know, we don't know which of the new season five characters are actually ones that might stick. But I'm very curious to see all that, basically.
And, you know, that's not to say that I wouldn't love to see Dylan become some sort of supernatural creature in the show. I think that would be amazing, but I also think it would kind of change the whole dynamic of his character, and because I like Styles so much, I'd be a little afraid of that kind of taking on permanent thing, whereas I think in 3B they did it really perfectly because he was allowed to have those sort of supernatural circumstances, and yet it was only temporary. So that was sort of like best case scenario.
My best case scenario is him becoming like a witch, like someone who can do things that maybe that every person has the potential to be able to do, but that they don't necessarily know how to. Someone who can do things, but not is something. It's like not in his DNA. It's like doing science, if you know what I mean. That he can do witchcraft. Which we got the very start off with the spark and the mountain ash, obviously there's, and we don't know if that's like every single person, you know, has the potential to be able to do that if they're human, or if you have to have a little bit of a special something, you know, in you. But I like the idea of him like doing, cause like with other shows where people sort of become witches, it like seems that they like, you know, they intrinsically have magic, and I don't think that that's something that exists in this world, in this Teen Wolf world, that just people have magic, if you know what I mean. Obviously Jennifer is the Dirac, and her druid stuff is like she's incredibly powerful and she's channeled some kind of power. But I like the idea of like normal humans being able to get, you know, like Eye of Rat and like, you know Moonflower picked in the dark night of February, and like make magic things like what, you know, either protection spells or little, you know, just to be able to do magic processes, kind of like that it's science or something, and we kind of know that that potential for power exists, so that would be what I would kind of be okay with Styles doing.
Yeah.
Or just learning how to use a gun or something, to be honest, at this point.
Like, I'd rather see him do something, like, a bit more physical, like nunchucks or
nunchucks?
Something like
that. Nunchucks? I was going to say nunchucks.
I just feel like, you know, his high energy just kind of, like, gives itself to nunchucks.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that would also be good. That would also be good. Yeah.
Awesome. Right. Now, my two other stipulations, I think, for season 5 would be to continue exploring his relationships with Malia Scott-Lydia, but also to have him explore his relationships with the newbies, like Kira, like Liam, that sort of thing. And also, I just want him to have another mystery. I think that it's so good when he's able to put his detective skills to the test and, you know, perhaps if he starts thinking about his future, what's he want to do at college, something like that to lead him into that job like his father, I think would be really cool.
Yeah, I feel like that we are going to get quite a lot of that in season 5 of what the hell am I going to do at the end of this year? I've been wrapped up in this weird supernatural world. Am I going to attempt to break out of that and like ignore it all, or am I going to attempt to stay here and I feel like I have a duty and I'm going to just, you know, eschew normal life and just have whatever job I can get to fund the fact that I have to protect this town from werewolves? I feel like Scott will want to try something different. I feel like Scott will be like, don't want to do this. I want to go and study to be a vet or something. If you know what I mean, like that he will attempt to kind of put his stuff aside, but I also can't imagine, like, he does have such a sense of duty and power that I can't necessarily imagine it. I feel like we might get Styles being the one being like, dude, I don't see anything else for the rest of my life except staying here and fighting werewolves, and Scott's like, I'd really like to not just do that, if you know what I mean. Like, I feel like that might be the dynamic that ends up happening, and obviously Lydia is very ambitious but is also very traumatized at the moment, so don't know how that's gonna go. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that Styles has, you know, will want to escape this or be in on it or combine the two? Do you think he has desires to get the hell out, or you know, is he a sort of a small town boy?
That's a really good question, because I feel like he doesn't necessarily have the loyalty to the town that Scott does, But at the same time, considering who he's surrounded by, I mean, his girlfriend is a werecoyote, his best friend is a werewolf, Lydia is a banshee, he's just constantly surrounded by all of this supernatural stuff. I think it would be hard for him to just drop everybody and go somewhere else and not have any connection with Beacon Hills. I mean, maybe he will move away and come back on weekends and fight crime.
Yeah, in a way, I feel like it would be easier for him, because he would be like, oh my, this is my chance to, like, do normal, like, stuff that a 19-year-old boy would do if their friends weren't all weird werewolves, if you know what I mean. But I don't know if he'd be into that.
He kind of hate it.
he might try it and then be like, this sucks, you guys are all trivial, you know nothing about real problems or something like that, and, like, just be really scornful of it all. I don't see him having that personality. I honestly see Scott having that personality, or at least Scott when the show started. I don't know, you know, if he's got to the point where he still has those kind of dreams, because we do see him trying to, you know, better himself at school and lacrosse and all of that kind of stuff. He clearly doesn't care about only being a werewolf, or he clearly doesn't think that that's his primary responsibility in life. And I actually, you know, see Scott as having the personality of, like, I want to go, you know, see what's out there in the world, do stuff, be normal, you know, et cetera. But that I don't see him being in the position to leave everyone, basically. So, yeah, we'll have to see about that. I definitely think it's going to be a factor of season five. At the very least, 5B, because this season's getting split. Like, the, you know, if they're seniors in 5A... it'll be the first half of the year, presumably 5B will be the second half of the year, or at least the second term or something like that, like midway through the final year for them. So that could be really quite prominent issue. So to know how it's going to be if we end up getting like college wolf, but I'm a little bit stressed.
Yeah, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens, but... I mean, that pretty much wraps up our discussion. I want to read out some tweets that we got from people when I asked what they loved about Styles. So I'll go first, and then we'll just pass it back and forth till we get through these. There's about a handful of them. But yeah. The first one is from Johnny Banani. And they say, he's smart, snarky, nerdy, geeky, dorky, sensitive, loyal, genuine, kind, helpful, brave. Who wouldn't love Styles? I think those are great adjectives for Styles all around. Particularly, I really like his loyalty. I think that's a huge part of his character. I mean, I've heard there are people who don't like Styles, but to be honest, I don't know them personally, so I can't answer that question.
I don't know those people. We don't know those people. That's true. I think that he loyalty is a major aspect, and that's why I actually called him a Slytherin, which is, I know, a lot of people in the fandom, if we're going to talk about Hogwarts sorting, would consider him the same way. Because if you eliminate the whole, like, Slytherin evil trope, which cannot possibly be true, it's not like everyone who's gone through Slytherin House ends up being evil. A lot of the characters in Harry Potter that we've seen that are Slytherin but not evil, or not ultimately evil, like some of the Malfoys and like Merope Gaunt and like various other characters who were Slytherins but not Voldemort evil, they are incredibly loving and incredibly passionate, incredibly loyal to the people they care about. They just don't care whether they're doing right or wrong to do that, basically. Their people are the most important. They're the most, like, selfishly loving people, like Snape with Lily, which was, like, in some perspectives, really creepy. Some people don't like that relationship, but it is very loyal, very passionate, very loving to people that they choose. They just don't have objective care, or, you know, don't necessarily have, you know, the Gryffindor-like objective care over whether something is right or wrong. And I think that that's really true for Styles. I think that he is really, 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 really loyal to all of the people that he cares about, but that, unlike Scott, he doesn't really care what ends he goes to put his priorities first, basically. So the next tweet is from Flo Teen Wolf, and they've said, he shows that you're not always defenseless if you don't have the brawn. Brains are just as helpful, which I think is true and a nice characteristic.
Yep. And then we have Punk Princess LA, who says, while Styles may be made out of sarcasm, he has the biggest heart and the deepest loyalty to those who mean something to him. He does have a big heart. I really like that about him.
So the next one, Jazzy Shay, I love him because he's what's there to help out his friends and save the day, which is true. He is very much like not useless, but like he's, you know, as you said, much more defenseless, but he kind of sticks with everyone in that scenario and, you know, feels the need to basically help and contribute and, you know, defend and basically do what he can, despite the fact that he is quite, you know, quite helpless compared to pretty much everyone else he knows at this point.
Nicole Florence says, I love Styles for how he'll do anything for those he loves, how he's never afraid to share his opinions, how he embraces and values his humanity, how brave he is, and of course, I adore his bromance with Scott. I think the bromance is a big aspect as well, but I also like the whole, like, he's not afraid to share his opinions. He's not afraid to stand up to people and kind of call it how it is. And, you know, sometimes that can be a little like black humor thrown in there, and you kind of have to wonder if he means it or not. But I think that, you know, the fact that Styles is willing to explore all options, no matter the consequences, is actually a really important part of his character in terms of, you know, just trying to do what needs to be done. Whereas I think, you know, that would hold Scott back a little bit. And we've talked about that before.
I want him and Deaton to have a full-on fight one day. Not physical, like a words, like a, you know, like I want him and Deaton to have a full-on, like argument, like, in front of Scott, possibly. And Scott will, like, cry in the corner. But, like, I want that so badly, like, in terms of the sharing opinions and stuff like that. Last one here is Ms. Penny Crumb. Says, so many reasons, his unfailing loyalty, his friends and family, his wit, his determination. The thing that sticks out to me is that he has no supernatural powers and still has made himself one of the most valued members of the pack, which, yes, I think that is a pretty obviously major thing. Yeah, so that's basically our discussion of Styles' arc. Feel free to, you know, comment back with any of the importance that you think have been the most important, you know, any of the moments during the show that have been the most important for Styles, whether it's his, you know, development with the characters that we've talked about, whether it's been, you know, something that we didn't mention, and just where you want him to go in season 5, basically. You can stay around and listen to me basically have another conversation about Styles' arc and how that affects the way that basically fandom has portrayed him, because obviously he's pretty much the most popular character in fandom, whether that's through Steric or through just fan art, other shipping, you know, other fan fiction and you know, the potential of him and Lydia, the potential of him and Scott, all sorts of things. He's been fandom's favorite for a long time, and we're going to have a bit of a talk with someone in the fandom about what's that's been like from the perspective of fandom creator. So if you're interested in that, you can stick around and listen. Otherwise, if you're not a fan fiction-y kind of person, you can come and talk to us on Twitter about or Tumblr about the, you know, what we've talked about here. So we shall say bye from me and Karen, and then you can tune back in if you want to. Otherwise, we'll see you next time. So bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi guys, I'm back again. We've got rid of Karen, she's gone now. But I have got another special guest to add on to this episode this week to basically talk about the creation of Styles and his development from the perspective of a fanfiction writer, from the perspective of someone who writes a lot of Styles' perspective, getting into his head and what that's like for someone who is interpreting the character and creating him. You know, tying into the canon that we've had of the last 4 seasons. So this is a little bit of an interesting concept that we've never really done on the show before. We've obviously talked about fan fiction many times, but this particular aspect of exploring the process of interpreting one of our characters that we know so well, we have not done this before. So if this is something you find interesting, let us know and we can have a think about doing it potentially with other characters. But today we're going to be talking a little bit about Styles with Loz, who you may know as a relatively prolific fanfiction writer in the Teen Wolf community. Her AO3 is just Loz, L-O-Z, if you want to go check that out. But she's here with me today, so hello, Loz.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for coming on with us tonight and talking about styles, basically. So from what I know, you've written quite a lot of Teen Wolf fan fiction over the past 3 years, since around 2012, which is around the same time we started the podcast. And would you say that sort of the majority of what you've written would feature not just Styles as a lead character, but Styles' point of view?
Yeah, I would probably say not the majority features his point of view, but I don't think I've written a story that he's not in.
Yeah. And why is that specifically? May I ask what makes him the kind of linchpin of what you do in fandom?
He's the first character that I fell in love with from Teen Wolf. So he's what sort of pulled me into the show. Mm-hmm. And I like his take on the world, and I like his voice. He's got quite a distinctive voice. And so it's something that I really enjoy writing.
Cool. Okay. So when you first got into, I guess, writing Teen Wolf fan fiction in 2012-ish, what was the first, I guess, your first idea or the first story you wanted to tell, and what from the canon, I guess, inspired that, or what, I guess, it could have been something from the fandom that inspired that. But yeah, basically what sort of drew you into going from sort of, I guess, a consumer of the fandom to a writer? Because it's not the first fandom you've written for, obviously, but
no.
But not everyone chooses to write for every fandom they ever get into. So what was it about this?
You know, I wish I could tell you what it was, and I honestly have no idea. I just got the story idea. I was I'd watched The Avengers, and there was that line from Bruce about how he was always angry, and I linked that to Derek. And I did that just before Derek actually said that his anchor was anger, which just pleased me so much. I was so proud of myself.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, Derek and Styles was one of those juggernaut pairings that was really taking off. And I liked the kind of chemistry that they had in the show. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of interested in exploring it, because I'd read fan fiction before I saw the show, which was very interesting. I usually never do that. Mm-hmm. And when I watched the show, I went, hang on, these are very different from the characters.
This isn't what I just was read happening. About. Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I had no idea that Scott McCall was the main character of this show.
Oh, dear.
So that's really what it was. Yeah. I kind of went, I saw the first, I came in when the second series was halfway through airing.
Yeah, same, I think, actually.
Yeah. And I kind of was like, yeah, I'm interested in this. I want to write this. I liked the humor in it. Mm-hmm. And I just got this story idea, and I have really no idea where it came from. But one day I just kind of went, I'm going to write this story. Mm-hmm. And I did.
And that first fic that you posted is all about a Wendigo as well, which the show ended up doing later. So how did that feel when that came up?
That was great as well. Yeah, I love predicting canon before canon happens.
Yeah.
I think Wendigos are one of those... just one of those creatures that so many people just love to write, and there's a lot there, and there are so many different interpretations of that myth, of that legend, of that very important story, that I think, you know, so many people do it. So I was just following with the usual trend.
No, fair enough. I think it's good. It's always going to be that, or like an incubus or something like that. Like,
yeah. There's always those ones that just turn up, selkies, you know.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's great. I think that the fandom is a lot of fun with supernatural aspects to kind of research and play with. But, okay, going into, I guess, Styles, speaking a bit more specifically about how you write Styles. So we spoke a little bit earlier about the idea of writing fan fiction from the perspective of trying to get it as close to canon as possible, or, you know, with the perspective that your character is, you know, that you're writing is the character in the show. And then I know other people who write from the perspective of the character that they're writing is their character, like it's their Styles or it's their whoever, you know. It's not actually like they're not really too tied into, not really too tied into the canon, not to the point that it's kind of like, you know, badly written or out of character, but just that they don't take that perspective on it. They are kind of like, no, this is my version and I don't mind, you know, what happens. They do see them as characters that they kind of have grown themselves to an mm-hmm. extent. And I think that both readings of it are valid. I do see the perspective of, like, you know, if you're spending so long writing a character that it might not actually be based in the canon anymore. But which way have you sort of gone with that over the past few years?
Yeah, I'm mostly a very close to canon writer, mm-hmm. except for those times when I'm not. So... You know, I'm a bit of a contradiction. Sometimes I'll be as close to canon as I think I possibly can be, telling the story that I want to tell. Mm. Or I will decide, no, you know what? As long as this character is internally consistent in this story, I'm okay with it doing things that I don't really think they'd probably do on the show, but there's a reason why they wouldn't do it on the show, whereas in this story they've got plenty of reasons to do the thing. So yeah, I'm more of that writer. I'm not really an alternate universe writer, so I tend to write stories that are more based in canon, and so therefore I try to stick as close to that as possible. And I personally have trouble world building, so I'm not one of those people who writes these beautifully articulate, you know, new worlds. I kind of go, yeah, we're going to be in Beacon Hills, and these kind of monster of the week things are going to happen, and these relationships are going to happen, much like they do on the show, and that's what I am like as a writer.
No, that's fair enough, and it's all good fun, and that's definitely the kind of fan fiction that Karen, I'm a more sort of a quote-unquote experienced fan fiction reader, whereas Karen, we have sort of introduced her to fan fiction more than not, and she very much likes like canon compliant, kind of shippy canon compliant stuff that feels like it could be an episode or something like that. She loves that. So yeah. The next thing I kind of wanted to talk about at this point was you have sort of slightly switched horses a little bit from writing Styles and Derek to writing quite a lot of Scott and Styles. And this is the kind of thing that I actually wanted to talk about, with the idea of taking a character in, you know, that's there in the canon, and basically giving them motivations that you feel like could be canon compliant, if that's your take on the character, to try and have them be canon compliant. So I think Scott and Styles is a really good example of that. Of sort of getting to talk about that a little bit, because obviously Styles and Derek was a massive, massive pairing, and a lot of people can kind of, it's kind of, I don't want to say easy, but a lot of people can, their minds can go there with that. Their minds can go there with brand new character. They're meeting for the first time. They've got tension. Okay, we can build from here. Whereas Scott and Styles, you know, are a long-term best friendship, and that's actually, we were talking with Heidi from, she's one of the maintainers of Arcova of our own, and she does their legal stuff, and she says in general, in fandom, you see so much less of the, like, the best friend trope, like, than you ever do of kind of, like, two people who meet for the first time in the canon, basically. If people have been friends their whole life, and they don't already have, like a relationship that's, like, BFFs, actually gets less shipping done with it. And so, I don't know why that is, but we've kind of thought about it. And one of the theories I've sort of had about it, I am going somewhere with this, is that, like, to Scott and Styles, for example, you have them, you see them, and they've known each other since they were how old? You know, whatever, five years old.
Five.
So I think the question, you know, with creating that, like, with creating a, you know, a pairing between that, it's like, but it's not there already in the show. If it was going to be there already, wouldn't it have been there already, if you know what I mean? So that's my question for you as a writer of that pairing. What is your favourite way to interpret the Scott and Styles relationship to have, you know, one of them develop feelings, I suppose? Like, how do you sort of pull canon for that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a really difficult question because it depends. It's always one of those, it depends. Yeah. For me, I kind of have always, I mean, I'm multi-ship anyway, so yeah. I don't only, you know, think that Scott and Styles should be together.
Yeah, I think we all do with Teen Wolf on this show as well. Yeah,
yeah, it's really hard not to. Yeah. All of the characters have a really great chemistry.
Yeah.
It's, for me, it's about where does the conflict come from?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that's always in the back of my mind in a story. You know, where is the conflict there? Because I think that's one of the reasons why pairings like Styles and Derek are really popular, because you need a problem in a story.
Yeah.
And the problem with that kind of pairing is that their abilities to communicate do not always mesh well, you know, whereas you don't really have that with Scott and Styles, but sometimes you might, you know, you can find a way to make that the problem. I do think that they both do have very strong feelings for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really like devaluing platonic relationships and platonic feelings. But on the other hand, I have a long history of shipping best friends. It's something I've always done. I prefer that really inherent ingrained trust. So I guess for some stories, it comes from one of the characters just kind of realizing, I mean, they're still really young. They're only 16, 17 years old. Yeah. It's not like they've known each other since they were five and they're both 35. Yeah. And suddenly you're going, what? You know, they're still contending with hormones.
Yeah.
So I kind of go, well, the platonic side of the relationship has always been there between them. Or what if that does start to develop, you know, maybe something has pushed them to that point. So they've realized what they could lose. And so that's made them sort of change. For me, it's about finding what's new. It's about building on what's already there.
Yeah.
It's about where does the conflict come from?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we can say, well, why isn't the relationship already there?
Mm.
Well, they are only 17 years old.
Mm.
So the relationship isn't already there yet because they're still quite young and they're still figuring out what they want and how they can get it.
Mm.
So, yeah.
No, fair enough. Yeah, for me, it's always been something that has to, you know, something has to change. Like, it has to be a moment of change for a best friend pairing to kind of, have a change within their dynamic, obviously. Like, I personally don't particularly love the idea of, like, that one of them has been, like, pining away sadly for their whole life or something like that. So,
yeah, which is horrible. I feel like a terrible person. But, I've low-key always thought that, like, Styles has just been in love with Scott forever and he's just been there kind of going,
and maybe
Scott doesn't love me this way.
I can get it. Like, I can get it. And, I'm a huge, like, Steve and Bucky shipper. And I love the idea of that they were both into each other and that neither of them said anything about it for 95 years, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's my favourite.
I do get it. And but I suppose with Scott and Styles, I can also see it like being, you know, when people are friends for that long, that they don't necessarily realise like what their attachment means, if you know what I mean, because it's always been there. And then they're like, this isn't normal? Oh, okay.
That's what half of my stories for them are about, basically. Yeah. Like, suddenly going, this isn't...
That's what that is.
This isn't what other platonic relationships are all about. Huh. Yeah. This is interesting. We kind of depend on each other a bit more than most other friendships do. And then what happens if you take that away?
Yeah. No, I totally get that. And so it's just an interesting thing to, I guess, to think about. And, yeah, just basically having... you know, a relationship that, you know, in the canon has basically existed for, I guess, for so long from their perspective, and being able to kind of sort of interpret what might change to make them realize something like that. But no, I like it, and I definitely like your stories in that department. We've actually all read quite a few of them on the podcast. I'm not going to lie. So just going into the canon a bit more, I guess. What are some of your favourite moments from Styles' arc, like, over the four seasons, like, during, you know, whichever seasons were your favourites, that either informed you the most about who you feel like he is as a character or inspired you to write, you know, whether it's, like, a reaction piece or just inspired... how you write the character or gave you a perspective on the character that you maybe didn't have before?
Yeah, I think his loyalty and the way his loyalty presents itself throughout all of the seasons is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And that often inspires me. I don't always write about it as much as I want to be honest. I kind of think about it a lot more, and it kind of finds its way into the back of my stories. But yeah. But it's certainly a huge part of the way I view the character, is seeing the things that he does for the people he loves, and even for the people he doesn't love, because he's doing it for the people he loves.
Yeah.
I guess my favorite moments, I really do like the way he is a bit of a savior in the first season for Scott, you know, how he helps him work things out in Heart Monitor, for Derek, how he helps him, for Lydia. He does a lot of really noble acts in that season. And I think sometimes we either talk about them so much we turn them into this huge thing where it's like, oh, my God, it's the only thing that defines him, or we ignore them and act like, you know, some of the things that he says are the be-all and end-all of him rather than actually looking at his actions. I really like in the second series just a lot of the simple day-to-day dynamic stuff I really enjoy from Styles. And you see more of a development with his relationship with his father, which is really sweet. And we also start to see those moments when he breaks down a bit more. The first part of season three, I think we get some really great stuff there where we actually get to see how things are affecting him emotionally. And we get that for him more than I think we do for most of the other characters. So that's kind of, he is in that way, he is our way into the show, into the emotion of the show. I actually really liked the Nagitsune storyline. And I thought that we haven't actually seen his perspective on those things happening enough after the Nagitsune storyline happened. So I'm always there going, why didn't we get more of that? You know, that was so good. Why didn't we get more? But, you know, sometimes the show writers have different priorities from what fan fiction writers would have. And then following through with his relationship with Malia, I've liked seeing his more nurturing side has been really good to see again. He kind of only ever got it with his dad before, and it usually turns up in him being more abrasive. But you actually get to see him being a little bit sort of sweeter with her, which is nice to see.
Yeah, no, fair enough. All of that is very, very true, and all things that we've talked about a lot. And Karen and I are pretty much suckers for anything that the show has him do. We're always like, yeah, that was great, and this is great, and this is great. We try to think critically about it, but honestly, we do generally tend to love most of what goes on. But I think what you've said is true, that his perspective on what happened to him as the Nagitsune would definitely be something that would be great to see explored on screen. I'm sure many, many, many people have written about it and theorized about it, but it is something that feels like it would inform the rest of the character for the rest of his life, basically. So
I think we see that happening, but it's done in such a subtle way that you can sometimes kind of say it's not really being explored in an overt way, but it is being explored in a subtle way. It is informing how he behaves, but it's not necessarily stated that that's what it was.
Yeah, no, fair enough. What was your favorite period, I guess, to write within? Like, obviously you're still writing, you know, some people only like to write, you know, during one particular period of the show, and, you know, then they went off it either because they didn't want to, you know, they didn't like, you know, either particular characters leaving, or they just didn't want to anymore. But you're obviously still, you know, relatively active. But what was your favourite, I guess, era to set fiction in during, or just to think about what was going on in the world at that time of Teen Wolf?
Yeah, my favourite is imaginary time after most of the events of canon have existed. And, you know, it's kind of that time where usually I write the characters when they're 18. For various different reasons. And so it's imaginary time where certain things in canon may or may not have impacted on what's happening at this point. So I don't tend to stick to a particular season or to particular characters. I have to admit, I have moved away from writing Boyd and Erica as much in stories, which I don't like because I really liked Boyd and Erica.
Yeah.
And I want to write them more, but part of me has kind of gone, okay, well, they're not in canon anymore, so
yeah.
I probably shouldn't write them into my stories, but I always want to. I always want to.
Because that was a big part of the fan fiction that I was originally started reading with Teen Wolf, was definitely that era of the show, of you know, Derek's pack of idiot teens, and then, you know, Styles, Scott, Allison, Lydia, you know, somewhat Jackson, somewhat Danny, and stuff like that. And sort of now, obviously, the entire pack of who's around and who's alive and stuff is different. Like, so, you know, who'd be there in the future is different, which is disappointing in some ways, I guess. But which of the newest, this isn't Styles specific, but, you know, which of the newer characters are you finding that you are, you know, I guess either interested in writing or, you know, just finding making a good addition to whatever you are choosing to write?
Yeah, I really like all the new characters, actually. So I like Liam. I like writing him as an annoying little brother.
I really like him.
I didn't think I'd like him because some people were saying that he would be Jackson 2.0.
Mm.
And I didn't love Jackson. I didn't actually mind Jackson. I kind of like writing him as a low-level antagonist.
Yeah.
It's always kind of, you know, he's good for that. He's like the Draco Malfoy of Teen Wolf.
Love him. I'm not going to lie. Not like, oh, I'm a Jackson sympathizer and I think he's the hero, but I love
he's
him.
He's good as that. He's not going to kill them all unless
he's
being controlled by Matt. But he's a dick. Yeah.
He's
a pushback, and that's kind of always fun. I know, I understand the people who just want him forever gone. But Liam's not actually like Jackson at all.
No, I think Liam's great. But,
yeah, and there's something very endearing about him. But I really like Malia. I love Kira. I like Mason. Mm. I don't have much. I can't even remember his character. Is he Brett?
Brett. Brett's not too prominent, but he interests me vaguely. I think that he might be. We think that he might be something more potentially around a bit more, but we don't know at this point.
Yeah, and that's it. You kind of, I have to see what's going to happen in the next season. Because I've been hearing about Theo, and people keep talking about Theo, and I have no idea who Theo is, or what he is, or why he's there.
I think Theo is going to be interesting, potentially, to you as well, especially potentially to you as a Scott and Styles writer.
I've been reading things like that.
Because...
there's some people who are getting into arguments about it already.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Guys.
But he's got some connection to Scott.
Yeah, he is definitely an old friend of Scott's that he may have known pre-Styles.
How is that possible?
I don't know, maybe they were only maybe they met when they were like 8 and not like when they were like 5. I don't know.
I thought it was stated in the show that they met when they were 5.
I thought it was as well, but then
then again, this is Teen Wolf.
We just spoke to Lyndon Ashby at a convention on the weekend as well, and you know, and we were talking about that. Like, and I do have this interview to actually get written up, so this isn't actually like weird off the record spoiler or anything. But I was kind of like, so this Cody guy, Cody Christian, is he gonna be a bit of a him and Styles gonna have some sort of rivalry, given that he's kind of there to get in with Scott? And Lyndon was like, no, of course not. Why would they have a rivalry? It's going to be completely peaceful. And then just gives me a stares into the camera on the office style look. And I was like, oh, interesting. So,
but they do this all the time, don't they? Because
they
try to do that with Isaac and it never really worked. Like Scott and Isaac together had this great chemistry.
Yeah.
And they built up that relationship really well. But it never really impinged on Scott and Styles.
I mean, it would depend on who you talk to, I guess. Because I mean, I liked this. I loved the dynamic Isaac and Styles got when they were started to kind of have to work together as well later in that season 3. I really enjoyed all of them. I do see it as two different kinds of relationships. But there didn't seem to be too much time for jealousy, especially because we had to deal with the Allison and Isaac, right? You know, we couldn't have Scott having fits over everything. You know, he had to have the fit over Allison rather than Styles and all of that kind of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's interesting. I wanted to talk about the concept, I guess, for you as a fic writer, because I'm not a fic writer. I've never written fic. So anything that I kind of interpret about the show, I'm thinking about it in the sense of meta, or I'm thinking about it in the sense, you know, headcanon, or talking about it on the podcast. I never see a thing and I'm like, I theorize this about the character. I want to write a story about it. Like, I more kind of talk about it like it's quote-unquote fact, rather than talking about it as, you know, in the concept of being an inspiration for, like, my version of a story. And I'm just curious, as a writer, you know, how often that happens for you, you know, whether you have things that you believe in the show, like, as headcanon or as a theory, that or if how much that's separate for you, basically how much your kind of headcanons are things that you would then sort of write fic about, or how much are things that you kind of genuinely believe or kind of want to believe about the show, I suppose, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's really tough for me because I kind of believe 10 contradictory things at once. So I would say probably I mostly have headcanons that I know are just things that I have thought up in my mind, and I think, you know, this is how I've interpreted what's going on in canon. And then I've got a few hardcore things that I just truly believe, like, this is absolute fact. So I find it hard to distinguish between what is which, and it will only be noticeable to me when I get to the point where I read something someone else has said and I'm just like,
and you're like,
that is so not right. So it's usually I do it in relation to you know, what I disagree with more than what I agree with.
True. Is there any of those that you wouldn't mind sharing, like, or is it much so that you might get you into trouble?
Pack mom styles. Yeah. I don't get that. It's never made sense to me at all. So that whole trope of, you know, Styles suddenly being this incredibly nurturing character for all of the other people, in such a way that he's not also slightly snarky and also doing all kinds of things that are maybe not so nurturing. I find it really weird to think of him also as being the character that all the other characters will go to for help, because I think most of the time we don't really see that in the show. We see it a little bit, but we don't see it as much as it sometimes gets written. Apart from that, though, no, it's really small stuff that I don't really register much of, you know. And I'm someone who's like, write and let others write what they want to write type of writers, you know. What I believe, I don't have to totally agree with what someone has written for me to think that it's good writing, and I don't have to necessarily. I don't really kind of go, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I think would happen. That story is the most amazing story. Like, sometimes I'll be like, I know that this is slightly different from my personal views, but the story itself is internally consistent, and so I'm really enjoying this as a story.
No, fair enough, fair enough. I suppose one of the last things that we just wanted to talk about was, I guess, like, Styles moving forward. The idea of him moving forward, is it hard to set for you to separate, like, the idea of what you'd want him to do based on what you've written compared to what you would want him to do based in the story the show is telling?
It depends upon what it is. I feel like half of my answers here, it depends.
That's fair enough.
I think mostly no. I think whatever happens in the show doesn't necessarily have to completely change the way I have constructed the character in my mind. And so I've never had particular, oh yes, this is exactly what Styles must do. So I've written and I've imagined all kinds of different things for him. I think the only thing that would make me go, yeah, no, this is completely wrong, is if he and Scott never talk to each other ever again, and they never get in contact, and Styles has moved all the way onto the other side of the country, and he's just abandoned everyone. That to me is the only thing which would make me go, really? I don't think that's right. I don't think he would ever do that. You know, he wouldn't abandon his dad. He wouldn't abandon Lydia, I don't think. He wouldn't abandon Scott. I'm sorry, he just wouldn't do it. So that's the only thing where I'd be like, no, what a terrible ending. But everything else.
And that's something I've seen in tons of fic. I'm fucking off and pretending all of this didn't happen for 10 years and then coming back. I'm like, and I've read it and I'm like, but I've kind of been like, okay. All right.
Yeah, I can't see him doing that.
It's something we've been talking about a fair bit on the show at the moment, on the podcast in general, because you know, this season 5 is their senior year, and we're just talking about the idea of which, if any, of the cast or of the pack would kind of is not necessarily like looking for a way out and to like run away and get rid of all of these losers that they used to hang out with, but which of them would potentially want to, you know, live outside that world for a while, if any of them, like which of them would be like, okay, so I want to go to college and do some normal things and not be responsible for looking after this town from werewolves for a while. Like, do you think any of the current characters would potentially kind of be looking for, like, you know, an aerial Little Mermaid, like I want to be where the people are situation? Or
Lydia has always kind of been the character for me who I could conceivably imagine going, yep, I can use my banshee powers in another way. I can find a different way to focus it. And I'm out of this joint. You know, I don't want to be here anymore. But apart from that, I find it really hard to see the other characters actually going, see you, Beacon Hills. I'll leave you to all the demons and the monsters and the she and the whatever else is there, the Wendigos, the Selkies, and all the other supernatural creatures. You're on your own.
So do I, because I wonder about Scott sometimes, because he, you know, he has such a sense of responsibility to what he's gotten himself into, but on the other hand, he didn't choose it, and, you know, he had all of these, you know, things that he wanted in life, and I don't know.
We were set up from one of the very first scenes that he was a character who wasn't happy with how Beacon Hills was incredibly boring. You know, he wanted something interesting to happen. He wanted to become great at lacrosse and actually have more of a social life. He wanted to have more in his life, but he's really been changing and growing as the seasons have gone on. And he has become someone who's there saying, well, no, I need to fight the good fight because someone has to do it, and I am here and I have all of this power. So I can see him maybe moving a little bit away from Beacon Hills and going off, but he would constantly need to go back and have his ties there, you know?
Yeah, no,
and
I agree.
And I feel the same about most of the other characters. I mean, even Lydia, I think before the last season, I would have been more like, yep, Lydia's going, bye. But I think the last season even, we saw with her banshee powers growing stronger and that she's starting to have more of that empathy and that, I think she's always had empathy, but she's showing it more. She's showing more that she actually does have compassion for others and that she cares and that she actually wants to do the right thing.
No, fair enough.
Did you want to talk about music?
I did. Well, that was actually more that I said to Loz earlier, I'm going to talk to you about music in a second, because I want to do, I'm not sure if you've ever listened to our show before, it's totally fine if you haven't, but we often do a non sequitur section at the end, which is just my thing that I invented to basically have Karen and I talk about shit. And, well, by that, I mean, like, talk about a random question, like a non sequitur question. And I'm going to ask you one of those in a moment, but the reason I actually, even before you mentioned that in the call, in the chat, was a lot of your fan fictions are titled with song titles, and they're all awesome songs, and some of them are, like, Australian songs that no one else will know. Well, not no one else, but, you know.
Only the Australians will know.
And so I was just like, oh, yeah, this is cool. So, yeah, that's basically, what was just, like, oh, this girl's got some cool music stuff going on, which I really like. Is that something, what I was just going to ask as well, like, do you have, obviously they're not necessarily Oh, do you remember the days of fandom where people used to like write like song fic? like...
Yeah, boy, do I! I wrote a really weird song fic one year, several years ago, just to mock song fic, which I feel bad about now because now I'm kind of like that's not a cool thing to do.
Fandom was different, like the trends were different, and you know probably we're gonna in 10 years be like, what the hell, Tumblr thing, like you know, like it's gonna be different, like. But do you have any songs or music that kind of like, again, going with like headcanons and stuff that are like a really unique styles song for you?
Yeah. I do. I mostly, if I have a song, it's generally about the relationship with other characters rather than just the character itself.
No, no,
but, Disarm by the Smashing Pumpkins is what I've titled one of my stories after, because I kind of, that's a real style song to me, but it's a slightly darker styles, rather than, you know, necessarily totally canon styles.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I find most of the time it's like listening to music reminds me of various different relationships as opposed to just one character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So when you write in fan fiction, and when you're writing stuff that's like Styles's point of view, basically, what do you sort of take into account when you're doing that? Like, I guess both in, like, you know, tone, vocabulary, reactions, like, dialogue. What mindset do you put on for him compared to, you know, another character that you might be writing?
Yeah, great question. Well, for one thing, you might be able to tell I'm not American. I'm English Australian. And so part of that is the vocabulary. So I'm usually quite good at hearing character voice and writing their dialogue. And so whenever I'm writing from his perspective, I try to make it a very limited third person so that we're really getting his kind of vocabulary and his way of phrasing things through the narrative as well as through the dialogue. So that's the first kind of thing that I do. When I write any character, I tend to write most of the time in very limited third rather than an omniscient third where you kind of show all of the different characters' emotions and the way they're reacting to things. Because I write very short fiction and it's not a good idea to bounce point of view during short fiction.
Yeah.
The other thing I do is I probably actually use slightly less slang than I use. Like I don't have him using dude as much as I actually say in real life, which is so wrong. I always have jokes, you know, and puns that I have ready, even in serious fiction, because I'm just terrible for that, and I really like them. And you need to lighten darkness, so I do that. I often have him saying one thing and doing another, because I think that's what he does in the show. And so I do that in my own writing as well. So he might say that he's feeling a certain way about something, but then a lot of the narrative, which shows the way he is acting, is going to directly contradict what he's actually said.
Mm. Even if it's when he's saying it to himself.
Yes, especially when he's saying it to himself.
Yeah.
I think the thing for me, sometimes Styles is a very honest character, but he's not a very truthful one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true to what he says to himself as well. So he says things like, you know, I'm fragile. I'm what is it, 142 pounds?
47 or something.
Yeah, whatever it is he says. And he's like, that is such a lie. You know, I think the show is trying to make us believe that he is skinnier than Dylan O'Brien is, and that he is, you know, he is not quite, he's not a 23-year-old man. He is actually just a 17-year-old boy, but he lies a relatively frequent amount to himself and to others. So, but he's very honest when he's doing that. It's just such a contradiction, but that's what I think Styles is. So I guess I kind of, I always have to really know the theme of my story and what the point of my story is, and I build everything up from there.
Fair enough. This might be a little bit of a difficult or stupid question, but do you have a favourite of your own fic for Teen Wolf, specifically for your Styles perspective? Do you sort of have one that you're really the most pleased with or feel the most sort of either validated by something that happened later in canon or just pleased with in general?
I wish I could say that I did, but I'm one of those really horrible self-critical authors who says that everything they write is appalling.
Oh, that's not true.
Well, that's true. Thanks.
No, I said that's not true.
Oh, I didn't hear the not. Okay.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, everything's horrible. Yeah, get out. Like,
it's
why
the worst.
Are you here?
Why am I doing this? Yeah, no,
that's not true.
I guess, yeah, from a Styles perspective where I think I've got the closest to how I actually genuinely view Styles is probably a phenomenon when you came along. Mm-hmm. Because in all of my other stories, there are always parts of it that I either no longer agree with or that I'd never agreed with at the time, but I just wrote it in the story because I wanted it to work in the story. So I think that one might be the closest to how I genuinely view Styles, the character. But I honestly can't say because I don't think I've yet written him the way I want to.
Oh, well, you know, you've got something to aim for, basically.
Yeah.
Got such good song titles. Sorry, you've just got such good song titles. Phenomenon is the road trip fic, yes.
Yep.
Which is the first one I would have read of yours because Brooke made me, which is fine. And I think it was the first Scott and Styles fic where I like got it as well. Like I definitely wasn't seeking that pairing out. Mm-hmm. But I also like Steric, but I feel like the reason I like Steric is because there was so much Steric fic, and so by process of elimination, a lot of it was good quality, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah.
I still do like Styles and Derek together. Yeah. I kind of, I, and I'm probably shooting myself in the foot for saying that because some people I know just do not at all. But I always thought there was a lot of real potential there for their characters to actually build up a relationship. And I kind of always feel a little bit sad that we didn't get that to the potential we could have had. So, yeah, you know, I kind of feel the same way. I always liked them together. I did think that a lot of people wrote them in ways that I never quite saw, but that was okay because the stories themselves I really enjoyed.
I feel like I've learned a lot more about the characters, both of them, since then, and nothing about what I've learned about the characters has made me think that they wouldn't still work really well. Like, I feel like there's a lot.
No, they still could.
Especially Derek, like, and his whole, like, failing at being an alpha thing, basically. Yeah. Like, everything about Derek is just... but I've never had one, you know, OTP with Teen Wolf where I was like, it's this and I can't see them with any other character. Unlike Stephen Bucky, as already mentioned. I can't. I'm like, no, don't even talk to me about any other ships.
I'm not like that in the MCU either because I'm not. And I do OTP Steve Bucky, but I also kind of go, Steve and Peggy were really sweet. Steve and Sam and
I can see it all. I can see it all. But yeah, but Teen Wolf, there was nothing that I was like so desperate about that I couldn't see anything else.
Yeah.
And I like all of the canon ships. Like I like the I like the idea of Styles with Lydia. I can see it working. I like the idea of him with Malia at the moment. Like I think that it's all good, and I think that there is a lot of potential, or there would have been a lot of potential for Steven, for Steve, Styles and Derek.
Steve and Derek.
Interesting. No. Jesus Christ.
just imagine them though. How like they're both shirtless, the muscles, and
they're just sitting there not saying anything. All right. Anyway, I think there was a lot of potential for that. And we did a rewatch like a little while ago and I was like, those scenes were really charged. Like it wasn't out of nowhere, that pairing, but
I never thought it was out of nowhere.
Sorry, go on.
Sorry. I was going to say, I at first didn't get it. It took me a while. I didn't get it straight away.
It took me
a few episodes and then I was like, oh wait, no, I see it. Now I know why.
I have the worst moment of starting to ship Styles and Derek in the canon ever, which is in Abomination, basically, when Styles
yeah.
calls him an abomination. Like, yes, well, he's saying an abomination. And then the look on Derek's face where he's like, oh, that's how you see me? Thanks. And he looks all crushed.
Yeah.
That's the moment I started shipping it. And I was like, wow, you love pain yeah. so much. Anyway, what I was going to ask, I guess that you kind of answered one of my questions just then, which was when asked about the favorite, you said the one where you feel like you've written him like closest to the way you want him to or closest to the way you see him.
Mm-hmm.
What fic of yours, not because it's like bad quality, but, you know, maybe because it's more AU or something, what fic do you think that you've written that it's the least canon compliant, I suppose?
I don't know. Maybe my first one, I Intend to Be Independently Blue, which is, of course, my most popular story. I kind of, there were certain things in that which I think that at the time made sense to me, but if I was to read it now, I'd kind of go, really? Really? I think we've learned so much more about the characters now that I wouldn't probably view him quite that way. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of something I was interested in, is like how, I guess, as the canon has changed, you know, basically how you have changed, like the biggest things that you've changed about how you see him or how you write him as the canon has changed.
Mm.
Are there any particular examples of that? Not necessarily stuff that you'd want to critique from the fic, but just stuff that you sort of know that you've changed perspective on?
Yeah, I know I'm harping on about Scott and Stiles a lot, but but part of it is the way that he views Scott. I think early on I kind of really bought into that the bitterness that we saw, like in the episode where he makes the Scott dog bowl, you know, and when he was really annoyed when Scott wasn't picking up the phone. Once again, magic bullet, right? but I don't think I As we found out more about that, and as I got to see things more from Scott's perspective as well, I didn't tend to write Stiles as being that bitter in that regard. So that certainly changed. I write him slightly less idiosyncratic than I used to. So he used to be far more kind of Joss Whedon slang, kind of very... you know, he didn't speak much like a real person speaks in my early stories.
Yeah,
he was way more over the top. And once again, it was, I don't think I've spoken about this much, but the reason that I really liked Stiles was because he reminded me of Sean Spencer from Psych. And so in my early stories, he's far more like Sean Spencer from Psych than he would be these days. And changing his motivations as well, I think. I think early on... his motivation was really just to survive, and now his motivation, I think, is more proactive, and he actually, he's got more of a caretaker role.
No, fair enough. I was going to say as well, mentioned a little bit about things that you would have liked to see explored more, you know, like obviously him and Derek and him and the Nagitsune reaction. Is there any other aspects, like even small little aspects, you know, that they've mentioned that you kind of... either, you know, that you want to know you want to know more about in the canon, or that you've kind of used a lot in your fan fiction, whether it's like, you know, stuff about his mental health, or whether it's stuff about his like past with Scott or his mother or whatever, like,
yeah.
Is there any all things of those. That you really, all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I really want to learn more about his relationship with his mother and how that informed him. And I always really did like the idea that he had the buzz cut because his mother had a buzz cut.
Yeah. So,
and I know now that we know things are slightly different, because I think most people used to think that that she passed away from cancer. And so that would kind of justify that. But we don't know that it was not that she needed to have surgery or
yeah
you know, so
for
maybe,
sure
maybe that's
she had a brain disease, so
yeah.
Who can tell.
I want to know more about what he was like growing up, because I do think he's got some deep-seated issues there, you know, when he thinks that he's been a real burden on his father. And I kind of want to know, like, what does he see his future as being? Because I don't think we've been told anything about that at all. Or I don't think we've been told that from any of the characters, you know. Well, what does he want to do in the future? What does he see happening?
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of things I'm really interested in.
I think we're really hoping to get that in season 5.
But, we should do, shouldn't we?
I like that you said, by the way, that that first fic of yours you think is the most out of character for Styles or the least canon compliant and not the one where he literally murders people.
The one where he literally murders people was deliberately, you know, very, very...
yeah, I know.
Left. You know, I was thinking from my canon compliant when I'm actually trying to be canon compliant.
Oh,
okay. As opposed to, yeah, no, he's a serial killer.
I mean, I wouldn't not see it, like, if you know what
There's
I mean.
There's a good reason in that story.
He's yeah, I think
Scott.
I think he's much, you know, obviously much more morally grey than Scott, in, you know, in his way. I think that he is, you know, the idea of the, you know, he's the Bucky. Like, he's the Bucky to Scott's Steve in the sense, like the original Bucky, like, before he was the Winter Soldier, was still trained and had the persona and had the inner kind of, I guess, gut or, you know, lack of conscience in a way to kind of do the bad stuff for the sake of good.
That's it.
That the good guy couldn't be seen to do. And I think that Styles has that.
Yeah, you have to have, if you're going to have an idealist, you know, someone who really believes in doing the right things for the right reasons,
yeah,
you have to have the pragmatic character who is doing all the little parts of things that they cannot do, or at least voicing that those things should be done. So then that idealistic character can say, no, this is not our way.
And then that's there in the season 5 trailer. I mean, if you've seen that already, you know, with, you know, him saying to Scott, like, why don't you trust him or something?
Yeah, because you trust
everyone!
And he
says, because you trust everyone, and it's true, and it's, like, been 5 seasons coming, you know, so I'm quite excited for that.
True, but I would argue with you. I don't think it's true.
You don't think Scott does?
Well, I don't know. I don't think Scott trusts everyone at all. I think that Scott gives the appearance that he trusts people, but he never trusted Gerard. He trusts Deucalion. He doesn't trust them. What he is willing to do is work with them as long as it's going to diminish bloodshed. But he doesn't trust them. I think he is a far more discerning character than sometimes we like to think. He trusts Alan Deaton an awful lot more than I think anyone else does.
Oh God!
but he doesn't trust Peter, and he never trusted Peter. So I think it's one of those instances again where Styles is saying something that he knows inherently is not absolutely true, but the honesty is there in that. If Scott is going to work with all of these people, well, he has to be there reminding Scott constantly about why he isn't trusting them at the same time.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I can see that. And I was just going to ask, actually, you mentioned Deaton because that's my favourite thing. I was going to say to you what I just sort of, I guess, just to wrap up, because we've been going for nearly an hour now, so I won't keep you for too long. But yeah, I was going to ask you what character coming up into season 5 that you'd like to see Styles interact with more, I guess, in terms of, you know, some dynamic that you think could be interesting or has been interesting from the little bits. My personal preference would be with Alan Deaton because I want them to have a fucking screaming fight.
Yeah.
I want Styles to rip him a new one. Like, I really just want them to have, like, this... Well, at least Deaton probably wouldn't end up getting. He'd probably try and be all like.
He would just be standing there, his face completely calm.
I want Styles to just be like, you did this, and you don't say anything, and blah blah. I just want him to just go off on one at Deaton really badly. So that's my choice. But I was curious as to whether you had potentially a less angry one, like a fun one, or it could be an angry one if you want it to be.
Yeah. No, I certainly agree that I think there's so much potential there for Styles and Deaton being there together and having a conversation where Scott is nowhere around. And I think it would be a very interesting conversation to be able to witness. And I don't know whether he would He would probably, yeah. It depends. Oh, my gosh, I have to stop saying that. He's going to be pushed to the point when he's going to be shouting at Deaton, if that ever happens. It would be great to see. I agree.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him a little bit more with Liam as well, because I actually thought that there was a lot of comedic gold in their scenes when they were together, and I think it's kind of like a good way of showing the connections among that pack, the McCall kind of pack. I'd love to see him more with Kira. I think that we need to see them hanging out without anyone else as well, because I want to see the friendship there. I always really wanted to see him with Allison as well and see a friendship developing there, and I was really sad when we didn't really get that much either. So, yeah, I kind of always want to see Stiles with everyone.
Fair enough. I think him and Kira could be quite a good team in terms of sort of the brains of the operation in terms of planning or research or whatever, because she's so into it. She's so like, oh my god, this stuff is real, this is amazing.
Yeah,
I print off 40 pages of research for that boy in my history class.
And they've kind of pulled away from that a bit, and I think that's a shame, because I think that there's lots there that could be mined, you know. It would be really good to see them researching together.
Yeah, I think that would be really fun. But yeah, I'll go over to our non sequitur question now, because I wanted to just get to that, and we have been going for an hour, so I don't want to keep you for too much longer. So I didn't get to do this with Karen this week, but now that I've got you here, I've got a really great one for you, given our conversation before we started. We're going to do a non sequitur section question. So my question for you, just before we finish up, and I'll say thank you and bye to you properly at the end, is... before we started the episode, Loz and I were just mentioning, talking about Nevermind the Buzzcocks, which is one of our favourite shows. It's a British music panel comedy show, for all of those who aren't aware of it, and how it's going to be ending after many, many seasons and after a bit of a downhill road with viewers and hosts changing and things. But my question for you is, number one, what was your favourite episode of Buzzcocks? And number two, what would be like your ideal guests on a panel, basically, or on a lineup for Nevermind the Buzzcocks?
Okay. One of the episodes that Richard Iowati hosted was one of the funniest things I have ever seen. So that's probably my favourite. Although there were some episodes that Simon Amstel hosted that I really liked as well, but I can't quite remember them off the top of my head. But yeah, I think one of the particular ones that Richard Iowati did was really good. He was just very deadpan the whole time. So he would have to be on the panel. I miss Bill Bailey, so it'd be great to have Bill Bailey back. I love Bill Jupitus already, so he's good. I really like Paloma Faith. I think she's always kind of over the top and entertaining. So you know, a musician, it would be good to have her. So I've got four. I think I need two more. comedians I like. I don't know. There are so many. Let's think of musical artists instead. Josh Groban is always hilarious, so he would be really good. I don't know. Adele. I haven't really seen Adele much. She might have done an episode once, but she's great. Yeah. So it would be good. So, you know, we've got a couple females there, so that's good. We've got some balance, more than sometimes the show had.
Yeah.
I think that's what my ideal lineup would be.
Okay, I've got a couple of favourites. One of them was a couple of favourite episodes. One, I think they would have been in the Simon Amstel era.
Mm-hmm.
It was Stephen Fry was a guest and Dominic Cooper was a guest.
Yeah.
And that episode destroyed me. A couple of the John Barrowman ones.
Yeah.
And then there was a great one where it was Noel was a guest on Bill's team. He wasn't, Noel Fielding was a guest. He wasn't the host. And I think the other person on the team was, who was it? No, he was on Phil's team. It was Donny Tourette. Donny Tourette's from the, I can't even remember what his stupid band was called. It's just one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So that, I can't remember what other guests were on that with them, but it was, I think Noel was definitely a guest. Noel was a guest with Bill. Donny was on it. It was freaking hysterical. My ideal lineup would probably be, I would keep I would probably keep Noel and Phil.
Mm-hmm.
I would like Carl Barat from the Libertines because he's never been on it and he's very funny and ridiculous and he comes up with very strange things. I would like Sue Perkins.
Yes.
From the Great British Bake Off and other British comedy things. I would like, who else do I want? Nick Grimshaw, maybe, who's the host of the Radio 1 Breakfast Show. And I can't think of who else. Maybe someone else like Alexa Chung, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for two girls, two boys. They're all British as well, so it would be easy to get them. They have nothing better to do. Alexa Chung is just a very, very funny girl as well to me. So that would be my ideal lineup. Would be, and I really want a member of One Direction to go on it one day because that would just be great for me. But they won't be able to because they're cancelling the show. Which
yeah,
is what we were talking
and they
about.
Cancelled it in such a way that they've said, yep, the last episode has aired, which is just a pathetic thing
to
do.
That's just not okay. Yeah. Like, that's not all right. I'm pretty grateful. Last time I was in the UK, which is in October last year, I actually got to go to a taping for the first time ever. I've been trying to get tickets for years and years to go to a taping or for it to be taping at the time that I was in the UK. You know, I visited the UK several times and I've been to a couple of other panel shows and stuff, but I never got Buzzcocks and I did this time and we got in and it was great and it was funny and yeah, now they are cancelling it. So I did get to go once, but.
Well, that's yeah. good. I mean, that's lucky, really.
I do feel lucky. I do feel very lucky and grateful, but I'm glad that we ended up going and you know, that, you know, now that I did not suspect that it would ever be cancelled, if you know what I mean. It's like cancelled
yeah.
Christmas. Like, I know. Like, oh, terrible. It's really, really bad. Anyway, never mind, I suppose. But yeah, that was our great non sequitur question that no one in America will understand, probably. So,
yeah, and very few people in Australia and New Zealand
anywhere
or anywhere else.
Never mind. Anyway, I will have to let you go, but I just wanted to say a big thank you for coming on and talking about styles with us in this way, which has been very interesting. And yeah, do you want to basically maybe tell people where they can find your stuff if they want to? I think we mentioned your AO3, but if you have Tumblr or Twitter or anything else that you do with fandom that you're willing to share, just let the nice podcast people know where to find you.
Well, thanks very much for having me on. It's been really fun. I've really enjoyed it. And
oh,
I was quite nervous. So
been so good. I'm an idiot. Don't be nervous.
You can find me at Lozenger8 on Tumblr. So it's Lozenger, the number 8, tumblr.com. My Twitter is private, but it's the same.
That's fine.
So if you want to add me, you can. But, you know, just tell me who you are first. Yep, on AO3, I am Loz. And that's pretty much the only places you'll find me these days.
No, fair enough. And I guess just to round us right out, what would be like, three of your own fan fictions that you would recommend, I guess, and if you happen to have any off the top of your head, which I possibly should have asked you in advance, so if you don't, I'll just edit it out, but that maybe three from other authors that you have particularly loved for the take on styles, as well as three of your own that you feel like are the best, like basically the best ones that you've shown styles in.
Okay, so I will go with my ones first because they're the ones I can do off the top of my head. I think that a phenomenon when you came along, which is a Scott Styles story.
Yeah, maybe just tell everyone a very brief summary of them. That one I can do. That one I can do. Seriously, guys, you will never read. No, I don't want to say a more fun fic, but it's like dream come true fic for me because it is a road trip fic to Disney World, which is such a great. The combination of those things for me is just like, yeah, it's just fantastic. But yes, it's a very introspective post high school, before college road trip. What is going on? Who are we? Etc. With the end game Disney World. Who wouldn't want to read that? Like, really? Anyway, go on. Sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. Apparent lack of ceremony is one of my early Scott Starr stories. And basically that's just about bed sharing. So Scott keeps coming into Styles' room at nighttime. This was written years ago, by the way. And it was, you know, a very common trope. And keeps cuddling up with Styles. And Styles thinks that it's because Scott wants to do it. But then, of course, there's always something extra going on.
Interesting.
Okay.
And that one's quoted from an amazing Australian indie pop song that you should all go and listen to.
Even while I'm sleeping, which is a great song, so you should definitely listen to it even when I'm sleeping. The third one. I still like I Intend to Be Independently Blue, which is a Styles Derek story, which was the first Teen Wolf story I ever wrote. And it's kind of a monster of the week with a Wendigo. And it's kind of weirdly lighthearted for some of the dark material in there. And it's kind of a sweet, quite innocent story in a lot of ways. So that's probably the other one that I'd recommend of mine. I really like The Echo Howl by Skinny Defenseless Heroism, who's also known as Anomalagus. I probably said that wrong, which is another Scott Styles story, but it's like a crossover with The Maze Runner. So that's a really great story and where I think the Styles perspective is particularly good. But there are so many stories I've read where I've just really loved Styles, so it's hard to think of some others. Like Real People Do by Queerly It Is, which is also Scott Styles, and that is, you know, a real kind of pining friends to lovers story.
I feel like someone wrecked that to me, like, relatively.
It's a really, really great story, so you should definitely read it. It's particularly good.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the story by Stellane from a few years ago, which I think had magic styles and was just like the best ever to have outlived the night. I just absolutely adore that story, which is Derek and Styles. So,
that as well, actually.
Oh, it's amazing. It's got 8,157 kudos. It's a really great story that has been recommended a lot.
Oh, no, I've totally read this. Yeah. I totally read this.
So that's another one.
Great. Anyway, if you want to check out any of those, I'll put links to those recs in the show notes and you can read some great Styles fan fiction, which should be fun. But I suppose that's all and we will let Loz go now. But thank you again for coming on with us and hopefully you have an enjoyable season 5 and you see some things that you like and feel inspired by.
Great. Thanks so much.
Bye.
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 Looking at the way that Styles has changed. So, do you want to go ahead then?
Yeah, hold on.
Like, no, not really.
We're in the season of My Landlord Likes to Mow the Grass at 9 o'clock at night.
Oh, I remember this! Throwback! I totally remember. We've been doing this for a long time.
Okay, he's turned off the mower now. Let's go. Mm-hmm.